My name is Bill Chaffin. I'm representing Ernest Paul in this matter. This is an arrest appeal for his convictions. My jury, District Court of Lancaster County, Nebraska. Obviously, Mr. Hall went to trial. One of our main issues on this hearing is that one of the things that we asked and regarding count three, Mr. Hall was charged with four counts. The first three counts of possession of firearm by prohibited person, fourth count is possession of baseball. Regarding counts one, two, and three, we had asked that as part of the instruction, the offense of entrapment by estoppel be part of the instruction. What's interesting in this case, and what I found incredibly interesting, because we usually don't have this happen, especially in the criminal case, where the client goes down to the county chair, fills out an application, gives a certificate to purchase a firearm, they run the check, they come back, and they say, "You're fine. Everything checks out. You go ahead and purchase a firearm."
He is wrong so screams.
Here's the funniest thing. I'm not sure that the record shows us exactly. I think there is some testimony, but I want to say Sandy Calvert about the whole process. As a defense attorney, what I find interesting is if you go and you fill out an application in Lancaster County, I'll just speak for Lancaster County, and you're given a certificate to purchase, they destroy that application within, I think, 3 months, maybe 3 to 6 months. If you fail to get an application, they hold it for 3 years, which is obviously the statute of limitation period. Also, I was trying to apply for a gun. The problem in this case is we didn't have all the applications. They have been destroyed by Lancaster County. All we had is his most recent application, which he went in and got because of the change of address. He'd actually gotten and gone about three times to get three certificates of purchase. The first time, obviously, he got it and went back to Cabela's or someplace like that and buy a gun. And then the second time, then the second place the story went to. But then he changed addresses and got his third permit. And on the third permit, which was the one that's admitted and is part of the record, it shows that he transposed the numbers. What's interesting about the transposition of the numbers is that Sandy Calvert's testimony is clearly that, first of all, if you read the application itself, Social Security is optional. You don't even have to give the Social Security. They don't use the Social Security number to find your criminal record. They use your name. As it turned out, as this trial clearly indicated, the thing that was throwing off the sheriff's department wasn't the Social Security number, but was in fact the junior. Once they removed the junior, when they actually got my client's full criminal history. And my client obviously had been convicted of a felony. He thought it had been expunged because of what the judge in California said. Unfortunately, as I'm sure this court is probably aware and has seen it before, there was that follow-up step of going in and actually applying for the fine or the set aside of the expungement of the jail, which Mr. Paul had not done. But the point being is that you can talk about the Social Security number. I know that the state during closing arguments has brought that up a lot. But I think that's just a ruse because simply the fact of the matter is that's not necessary. They don't use it. Even Sandy Albert testified, we don't even look at Social Security numbers when we're doing these things. It's not important to us.
The fact of the matter is, they never had any relevant historical facts for them to know about the convictions that he had been.
Well, I think the thing is, I think what Sadie Edwards talks about is the acting in good faith, that an authorized government official acting with actual or apparent authority told him that his conduct is legal.
Well, having all relevant historical facts.
Well, I think you had all, I think you have all relevant historical facts and correct names when you have his correct names. The irony of this is that if he had left off Junior, which would have been an incorrect statement, they probably would have caught the fact the very first that very
or if you would have marked the incline.
That's correct, but you have to remember that if he thinks it's been expunged, he doesn't think he's committed a felony. He's not lying by saying, I did not commit a felony. He thinks it's been expunged.
He doesn't think that the element, the government authority has to have been given all relevant historical facts. And they weren't given the relevant historical facts for the facts of the felony.
Well, I think that, first of all, I guess I would disagree on that, since I think that the relevant information they needed is name and his address and things like that, so that they can trace his criminal, trace his criminal history and find his criminal history. The fact in this case is they were unable to find his criminal history. But the other problem in this case is simply that he was not able to, that we were not able to use that defense on the third time. Because the court took that out of the instruction.
Well, isn't it a little inconsistent to say I was entrapped to believing I could possess that gun, and on the other hand, on the defense of I can possess that gun?
Well, I don't see it as inconsistent. I see it as saying, first of all, I don't recall possessing a gun. I don't believe the gun was in my room. I don't think I was in possession. If in fact you find I was in my room, or if I make statements that I may have purchased it from somebody from the street, and you believe that, I still have the right to purchase it because I have a certificate to purchase it, so I have a lawful right to purchase it, and would never have purchased it had it not been for the state telling me I was committing a legal act.
Didn't the jury reject that defense on the first count?
They rejected on the first two counts, but that gets into what I think is probably the error of the third count. But I think when you're talking to a jury and you say you have possession of a firearm by a particular person, and in two counts you say, well, he was entrapped on these two counts, but on this third count there's no entrapment defense, that I think this leads the jury into thinking, well, if you can't be entrapped on the third offense, how can you be entrapped on the first two? And I think that gets down to the nature of the problem of the injury that's done to Mr. Hall by not giving him a charge.
Mr. Chicken, before you run out of time, can you explain to me your argument on the sentencing and why it matters which order the sentences are issued as it relates to availability?
I'll try to listen. My limited understanding of this whole sentencing thing is that because Mr. Hall was convicted of the three possessions, those are mandatory minimums, and because then the possession of the defaced firearm, I want to say that he was 20, he was given 4-6 on it, because the mandatory minimums were run consecutively, were run concurrently, and that the face charge was run consecutively. So in fact, it's my understanding that he actually doesn't qualify for programs now because he has to wait till the mandatory minimums come out, because it's on the second offense that he starts earning time for his parole.
So are you saying he's only entitled to programming on a sentence that he's eligible for parole?
Right, that's my understanding. If in fact the sentence had been that he was sentenced to 4-6 on count 4, concurrent on counts 1-3 to be consecutive to count 4, he'd start his sentence by doing the count 4 time first.
you'd be eligible to draw on that count after 2 years.
He'd be eligible to draw on that count, and then you still have to do his minimum 3 years. So he's going to end up doing the 5 years before he gets eligible to draw on all four counts. But there's something, it's my understanding that there's something in the statute that, in the, that indicates that he's not eligible for programs because of the way the sentencing was worded.
So he serves 3 years? Minimum on concurrent charges, then he would start serving on his consecutive charges.
Then he finds, what's the minimum, what's the mandatory minimum is served? Then my, that's 3 years. Then you can start running the 2 years on there. You can start running part of that 4 years along with it. To be honest with you, I don't think about it. I think he has to do the current term first before he even starts the second term.
And you're referring to the good time statute,
Both the good time statute and the, the 83 section that I cited in my brief that has to do with programs and things that are available. But, that's part of the problem. I don't see how he gets to serving the sentence on the 4 to 6 until the 3 to 5 is done.
You don't think that after he serves 3, which is the mandatory minimum, then you can start serving the balance of balance and work on the programs,
I think that's how, to be honest, I think that's how it works, but my, the thing is, that my understanding is that if he had done, if the count 4 sentence had been the sentence he started on first to serve versus the last sentence he served, he would have been eligible for program.
But he would lose his ability to be in programs when he's serving the mandatory 3 years.
The mandatory minimum.
So he'd lost his programs.
Right, for 2 years.
So it's a question whether it loses an hour, loses an hour.
No, I think once you qualify for the program, still stay in the program, even if you're in mandatory minimum. I don't. That's the problem. That's the problem.
And any authority for not being eligible for programs for
I could not find it.
Thank you.
Yep, and again, man, 3G4312 on behalf of the athlete, state of the breath.
Can I have you start with the last?
The sentencing issue?
The sentencing issue. And the voluntary program.
Because I said brief, I didn't understand what he was offering me was. So I tried to address what I thought the sentence was. Okay, it was three sentences concurrent on class 1B felon, which there is, excuse me, no good time credit.
Okay. But just because there's no good time credit, is he eligible for program?
I don't think you will ever find a statute that says that because that's an executive function, not a sentencing function. That's why you can't find it, because it ain't there. It is the Department of Corrections and their mandate from the legislature to create certain programs, drug abuse programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for various maladies suffered by the inmate population. That comes from the legislature directly to the executive branch. The courts don't sentence to a program or from a program. That's an executive function. That's why the argument, I didn't understand what he was talking about. I can only point to the court sentence imposed, not titled good time credit, to serve the mandatory minimum. The other sentence is consecutive, which is lawful, given the fact that it's different elements of the offense, i.e. it faced fire. That's the best I can tell the court. As I said in brief, I did not understand the motion.
So
that
he's
entitled to programs. He's not. He's not entitled to programs. program. That's an executive function. That's for the Department of Corrections to decide. They set up the scheduling and so forth for inmates to make application.
You know, entitled to programs, the executive orders, rules prohibited, allowed.
That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. I know this is going to come as a shock, but I believe that the entrapment instruction was an error. Okay, all the way around. Now, it's obviously not prejudicial error because he got the defense he asked for, certainly on the first two counts. And the reason it was, he couldn't have acted in good faith because he knew he was a convicted felon. He was made the government official at the time he made his application. What he's asking the court to do is sanction a fraud. He reversed his Social Security number, and contrary to counsel's argument, Social Security does matter. When you make an application, sealed there, gun permit, or a purchase firearm certificate, you put Social Security number on there. What that does is enable a faster search of that Social Security number attached to the name to see if there is any criminal background. If that Social Security number doesn't match, then obviously you're not going to get the criminal background.
Does the application indicate it's optional?
That's correct. It does. But the fact is, when you put it in there, you reverse it. And so all he did is commit a fraud, knowing the fraud, because you do search by that number. It just expedites. That's all it does. Okay, having said that,
he thought his felony had been expunged.
The argument that it had been expunged, he certainly then didn't make the government official aware of all the relevant historical facts, nor was his reliance on the alleged non-statements of government officials reasonable. There was no statement. He made a fraudulent application and received a permit. There's no statement by a government official that he's capable or legal to purchase that, had they been aware of all the historical facts. He also changed his name on the other application and put a junior on. The testimony indicated from the lady that used to process those certificates and subsequently the charge, but the point being, she said the junior does change. So what he's doing is he's basically putting fake names in Social Security in order to obtain a purchase firearm certificate.
Well, was there any evidence as to whether he was or was not a junior?
Pardon me?
Was there evidence in the record as to whether he was or was not a junior?
I can't remember her name, the lady that processed the application since retired said yes, it did, a junior would change it.
Right,
I
can't. My question is, was he or was he not a junior?
I can't represent him in court that I remember that specific charge, only that he did, but I think I recall correctly, the junior was on one of the applications. I can't swear to that. There wouldn't have been any reason for that question to show why the application would have been different absent the junior being on the application. So I don't think that he met any of the elements trapped by a stop of offense. Now, as far as the idea of obtaining both the jury instruction for not being in possession and the stop of offense on the third, I think it's a court. Pointed out, it's entirely inconsistent. Even in brief, they acknowledge he purchased two pistols from stores and the third from a private owner. If that's true, then you purchased it, how could he not be in possession? Furthermore, so I don't think he's entitled to the entrapment defense because he bought it from a private person for $100 a piece on the street. That was his testimony.
Well, that wasn't his testimony, wasn't that what he told?
That's what he told the police officer on the execution of the search warrant, and that was testified to on the bottle when he denied he was ever in possession of the gun. So his lie was rebutted by the police officer. So I don't think he was entitled to the estoppel defense on any of the counts, because I think all he did was commit a fraud and say, yes, you're estoppel. So that can't be reasonable, and it can't be that the government authority reasonably knew all of the historical facts. And he never admitted it. So I just don't think it applies to all of it. As far as the sentence, in your honor, I did the best I could to submit it on brief with respect to what I believe the sentence was, and that there really wasn't any error in making the sentences consecutive because of the different elements of the husband, last count being the fake firearm. So with that, unless there are any further questions, I would submit it.
Thank you.
He is.
Thank you for appearing.